You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks. But we're not here to talk about sports today. Instead, we're going to talk about music.
2017 began with the promise of great protest music. At least punk will matter again, they said. Well, they were wrong.
You should have delivered that Arrested Development style.
Sure, there were some artists who were performing protest music, but mostly what we got was Eminem, who knew about protest, but somehow forgot how to rap.
Oh, no.
Instead, what really happened in 2017 is voices who had been marginalized by the mainstream became more prominent, and that was the protest that was happening. There was Cardi B, who released the first single by a female rapper to hit the top of the Billboard charts since 1998.
That was almost two decades ago.
Do you know who that artist was who did it in 1998?
I do now. But why did you say it anyway?
That was Lauryn Hill. Let me just tell you, Bodak Yellow is very different than what Lauryn Hill did. She was doing it on her own terms.
Yeah, it's fair to say.
In 2017 also, there were so many household name artists who released music, especially in the world of hip-hop, right? You had Kendrick Lamar, Future, Migos, Nicki Minaj, Gucci Mane. Our mom loves Gucci Mane.
Does she?
No. I'm just like, name a household name.
Okay.
It's a household name in Atlanta. But there was Drake, Rihanna, Jay-Z, all of these artists releasing music in 2017. SoundCloud, in a year where it almost shut down, still was the most important outlet for young hip-hop artists to reach the mainstream and accrue millions of plays.
And also our friends at Tasteful Profanity.
There were artists like XXXTentacion, Playboi Carti, and Sababy, who you've never heard of any of them.
Heard of Playboi Carti?
Who were able to accrue millions of plays because of SoundCloud. Think about this. If I would have bet you before the year that a horrorcore mumble rapper would put a track up on his SoundCloud page and have it get more than double the amount of plays on Spotify as the lead single from Taylor Swift's new album, what kind of odds would you have given me on that?
I mean, probably pretty good odds. Yeah.
They would have been like 1,000 to 1, right?
Okay.
And that's what happened with Lil Uzi Vert and XO Tour Life. More than double the amount of plays of Taylor Swift's lead single.
When you put it that way, it does sound pretty crazy.
Hip-hop was also able to push boundaries in 2017. There was Brockhampton, who pushed the boundaries of how many albums you can release in a year. There was Deem Spencer, who pushed the boundary of how soft-spoken you can be and still be an excellent rapper. There was Vince Staples, who pushed the boundary of you can release an electronic album and still be an excellent rapper on top of it. Meanwhile, artists like Taylor Swift and Katy Perry went the way of Jimmy Fallon.
I mean, Jimmy Fallon does still host a popular nighttime show at 11:35, and I think they still have some relevance as well.
They were releasing albums to shrinking fan bases this year.
Now may not be the ideal moment for their talents.
Electronic dance music still continued to draw large crowds at festivals.
Yeah, a lot of crowds at Bumbershoot.
But artists weren't able to push their way into the mainstream in the same way. They kind of remind me of Joel Stein fans.
Oh, no.
No.
Oh, that's going too
I was
going
to say Bernie fans, but that felt too hot. I felt like I might have offended too many people there. There were large crowds that somehow didn't matter. So maybe 2018 will be the year that punk music matters again, but I wouldn't bet on it.
Oh, wow. What a parting shot from you there. So a little bit on formatting for those of you who are new to our Music Year in Review. We're going to go through the Pitchfork Top 10 Songs of 2017. Then each of us will be delivering our Top 10 Songs of 2017. So anything else we should say before we dive in?
Really, just quickly, kind of an overview of the Top 10 Songs. How many of the Pitchfork Top 10 Songs had you not heard before this list came out? I feel like you average about two.
Let's see here. I would say definitely 3 and maybe 4.
Okay. 3.5.
Actually, maybe it's more than that. It might be 4 or 5.
So if I had to choose one theme of these top 10 songs, which we'll go through quickly, I felt like the first theme, and especially true with the first song on the list, but it was simplicity. You know, we were talking about that 2017 was supposed to be the year of protest music, and it felt like 2017 actually was a year where almost overly simple concepts became very important to mainstream pop songs.
Okay, I'll buy that. So then the number 10 song in the list, the first we're going to discuss, is Boys by Charlie XCX. And this is, yes, definitely a very simple, very catchy pop song. I would say that, and I think this is probably fairly typical, this was one this is the one I'm on the fence of whether I had heard, one of the ones that I'm on the fence about. And the more I heard it, the more it kind of got in my brain.
Oh, yeah.
But I will say that the, like, money noise in here,
it's the Mario noise.
It, yeah.
It was a great year for Nintendo.
It just, like, but it just made me want to listen to Drom's Cha-Cha.
The original version.
Yes.
I mean, look, whoever produced this knows that that is the perfect noise. Everybody out there has played so much Mario that we want to hear that noise over and over and over again. But just a very simple song, right? It's short. It's to the point. It has one point, and that is it. I was busy thinking about boys.
I mean, it's interesting because the video for this song was, in some ways, more of a kind of symbolic protest.
In what way?
Like...
there were a lot of boys. The video,
objectifying a bunch of males in the way that usually videos are objectifying women.
Okay.
So that's where there was kind of, you know, some 2017 movement to this.
And the video, I think, also kind of helped propel the song forward, featuring numerous pop artists, Chromeo, ASAP Rocky, Drom, and tons more. And I think was also directed by Charlie XCX herself.
All right. So number 9, one of the artists on this list that I was not familiar with at all, Kalela with Frontline. And I'm a fan. She's got an incredible voice.
Very 90s.
It's so 90s. There's a song in my top 10 that is also very 90s in a slightly different way, but this kind of reminded me of it in that sense.
I'm very curious what that song is that you're talking about. But this, I was a little bit surprised to see Kalela in the top 10. I mean, it's almost like if you could take the radio that we listened to on Cube 93 in like 1995 and put it into a pop song in 2017, this is exactly what it would sound like.
What else would you want besides that?
No, it was perfect. There's a reason that we still want to listen to it. 12 years later?
A lot of years later.
That's not that long. Wait.
Well, you said 1995, it's 22.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's old enough that this song is retro for people who were born like 10 years after us. Oh, no.
I would say the only question here is whether this was the best Kalela song or, let's see, what was the other one that was quite popular? LMK, which I believe the kids, it stands for Let Me Know.
I'd prefer LMK myself.
That's
where do you stand on that?
I think I'm slightly pro LMK. All right, number 8 on the list, Future with Mask Off.
Oh, man.
I had heard this song before at literally every NBA game.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Is this a big NBA song?
It is. So here's the thing.
Okay.
If you were to list my 10 songs I enjoyed listening to the most, especially if you were doing like a value over replacement song kind of thing, to include quantity, this would probably be in my top 10, but it will never appear in my top 10. Nor will any Future song.
Wow.
Because of my personal animosity towards Future and his treatment of Russell Wilson and Sierra and their child.
Okay, so I tried to avoid this for so long, and then I randomly turned it on, and it's so good.
It's a great song. It's well produced.
Right? I mean, that flute, you can't get past it.
It is.
Future doesn't do anything on the song, but he sounds so good. That's what I'm talking about, simplicity. It's like, when he's, like, everything that he says on the song, you're like, I don't really know what you're talking about, Future, but I like it.
Right.
Like, I can project out what you might mean by fuck it, mask off, but it doesn't, you're not saying those things. It's just whatever I think in my head, right?
The only question I had about this was going with this over the remix version with Kendrick Lamar.
Oh, the Kendrick Lamar remix is so much better.
Obviously.
I mean, you know, you can't, like, that's not really fair.
Well, it's not fair. It's a song that was released in 2017.
But this is the song.
I suppose.
What is the line? Wait, hold on. When Kendrick raps, "I'm the new Prince. Prince lived through me." You're just like, I feel it. You're like, yeah, that's true. This verse, it did get the same kind of attention that the Kendrick Control verse got. But I feel like this one was almost just as good.
Okay.
We're gonna obviously talk a lot more about Kendrick going forward. But I feel like the awesome thing that you get when an artist like Kendrick is active is you just get him on all sorts of other things. You've got this perfect beat, and you just need to throw him in there.
Yes. Including an album we'll talk about later that is more unexpected.
Oh no, it's U2. Oh no, wait, what? There better not be a song with U2 and Kendrick on your list.
I can't promise.
Oh,
that.
Oh my god. Okay.
All right, number 7, King Cruel.
Yes, King Cruel
with Dumb Surfer. This song was very difficult to listen to. I did not enjoy that experience.
God,
at all.
You're the worst. So first off, we're talking about Mario and Charlie XCX. King Cruel, I believe, I don't have any source for this, but just from seeing the two things together, I believe named after the ultimate villain from Donkey Kong Country.
Huh.
King K. Rool.
Oh, okay.
King Cruel.
I didn't put that together.
So anyway, King Cruel finally released a jam. It has been so long.
This was a jam?
You don't think this is a jam?
No, I don't think this was a jam.
This was the first jam since his name was Zoo Kid. It has been a long time. There was an Archie Marshall album.
His name is what? Zoo Kid?
People have been desperate for him to release what is close to pop music, which clearly you don't agree with.
I clearly don't, no.
But this song is a jam funneled through the King Cruel world. And it kind of feels like, to me, in this year, every single artist that is he not named after King K. Rool?
His stage name is inspired by the Elvis Presley film King Creole, and not King K. Rool, the character from the Donkey Kong video game series, as previously reported.
Oh, well, okay, so at the very least, I was close.
I mean, it wasn't insane.
It wasn't completely off base, and I'm going to go ahead and choose to believe that it is named after King K. Rool. Anyway.
That's 2017, facts don't matter.
Literally the only reason that I noticed that is because I've been playing a lot of Donkey Kong Country in 2017.
As one does.
Anyway.
One's five-year-old son.
It feels like he's only your nephew. You're
nephew.
The one who likes dad rock, but they're actually my children. Anyway. It feels like most of the artists that I'm interested in, especially British artists, whether it's Rex Orange County, Yellow Days, or Abangger, all inspired by King Cruel. He is the most influential British artist of our time.
Okay.
And you find it unlistenable.
Yep. God, in the sixth spot, Chanel by Frank Ocean, a song that I assume we will be hearing about in your top 10.
So good. I almost don't even want to talk about it.
Because of that?
It's going to be very high on my list.
Yeah, okay. We'll talk about that then. Number 5, the aforementioned EXO Tour
EXO Tour Life.
Life 3.
Wait, do you not understand? How old are you? You're like, it's a 3 backwards?
But there's 2 L's in there.
No, are you sure there are 2 L's?
I think there's 2 L's.
Ugh.
By Lil Uzi Vert.
You don't even know how to pronounce the word Uzi. No, I guess you got that right.
Wait, what?
No. What if I'm pronouncing this wrong? Okay, so this is in neither of our top 10s, I assume, right?
It is not, yeah.
But so catchy.
Very catchy.
I mean, we talked about Black Beatles last year, and I said this is maybe one of the best mainstream pop rap songs that I've heard in a long time. And this year, there are a lot of those.
That's true. I think this is one of the best radio songs of
yes.
the year for me. Like, I don't know how much I heard Mask Off on the radio necessarily. That was more of like an in-arena thing.
Yeah, Falcons games, Hawks games.
Well, yeah.
Thrashers games.
I don't think the Thrashers exist anymore. I'm pretty sure they don't exist. I like that you didn't even just assume the Braves wouldn't play this. Atlanta United games.
But as far, I mean, this was, we can assume that Despacito was the song in the summer, but EXO Tour Life is the song that is going to continue forever, it feels like.
That makes sense. It feels like Despacito has already fallen off. Didn't get a lot of love in these top 10 lists, as far as I could tell. Certainly not from Pitchfork. All right, number 4.
But wait, no. I'm going to talk about Lil Uzi Vert for a second. So there was this, and then at the beginning of the year, there was Bad and Bougie, right? Which Lil Uzi Vert has the last verse on.
Which was listed on some top 10 list, but should not qualify. It was a 2016 song.
And the album came out in 2017. Right. It's complicated territory.
That, to me, was a 2016 song.
But those two songs, having those kind of like at the beginning of the year and the middle of year as ubiquitous mainstream pop rap songs, it was a very good year for that genre.
Oh, without question. All right, number four, SZA featuring Travis Scott, Love Galore. So I would say there was a number of SZA songs you could have chosen from. Also, that's like a tongue twister.
Mm-hmm. From the Control album.
Yeah. I think my preference was Supermodel from there. Do you have a take here? You're looking at me with a blank stare.
Aside from Cardi B, it feels like SZA had the biggest year, the biggest unexpected year of any artist.
I would say SZA maybe even had, I mean...
Cardi B's like the most popular artist that there is. She went from like down here to the very top.
It's true, but mostly on the strength of the one song. I mean, and then her guest appearances. Like from her actual album, is there a second song that was particularly popular?
I don't know what albums are. Motorsport, is that on her album? That's a relatively popular song.
No, I think that was one of the guest appearances.
Okay. But so there's Travis Scott, who's the most deceptively popular artist in the entire world. He's like an arena artist, but I could not name a single Travis Scott song.
I feel like there's someone else who's more deceptively popular.
Who's that?
Odessa.
Odessa is another deceptively popular artist. But Travis Scott is a very popular artist who has never quite had the like super mainstream single in the way that something like EXO Tour Life. Right. And then there's SZA, who came out of nowhere, not came out of nowhere. There was a lot of excitement for her album, but who took a giant leap. Right. And it felt like everybody really wanted to cheer SZA on for this year. Her album kept getting delayed. And by the time it finally came out, it felt like there were so many supporters that it was going to be huge no matter what. And I think she delivered.
Yeah. All right. Number three, Lorde with Greenlight. So here's my take on this.
Oh.
I think the production value is terrific. I don't think this is a Lorde song. I think she's all wrong for this song, which is why I don't buy it. It's the best song from this album.
Totally agree. Totally agree with you.
Wow.
100%.
I was expecting to be rebuked.
I would not rebuke at all.
What was your favorite song off Lorde's album?
We're going to get to that in my top 10.
Oh.
But.
Intriguing.
But. I mean, part of it being in my top 10, I have to admit that my opinion is still the same as it is with Greenlight. When the song came out, I was very let down. I'm shocked to see it as the number three song of the year.
I don't know if I would say let down, because again, it's like a really well-produced song. It's just, something feels off.
It here. Sounds like a fun song.
I mean, okay, who would be the right pop artist to sing this song?
Carly Rae Jepsen.
Okay.
So, Lorde rises to fame on the back of these sparse beats, right?
Yeah.
Her music is like, you could, and when she came out, she played Decibel Festival in Seattle. Her first show in Seattle was at Decibel Festival. You could have almost described her as an electronic artist. And there is no way that you can describe this aside from being pure pop music. So she joins with Jack Antonoff from the band Fun and Bleachers. And this, he just can't help but turning it into a Fun and Bleachers song. He's not the type of artist who will take what you're already doing and elevate it to another level. He'll take what you're doing and turn it into his music.
I mean, his music is good.
No, I mean, there's nothing necessarily against his music. It just can kind of end up being a little bit bland. And to me, there was really not, like, this Greenlight song, I heard it and I was like, that's kind of catchy.
I liked it. I just, again, I think that she was the wrong person for it. Anything else to say there? I guess we're coming back to Lorde. All right, number two, an artist that we will definitely be hearing more about, Kendrick Lamar with DNA. I think, I mean, when Kendrick Lamar dropped this song in this album, you would have assumed this was going to be the number one song, right?
No. DNA?
You would have assumed that Humble was going to be the number one song.
Yes. And over time,
you would assume that Kendrick Lamar was going to be in the number one spot one way or another.
I feel like DNA slowly overtook Humble. You listen to it. Have you listened to the song? You should try this. And think to yourself, especially at the end, and especially live, when does Kendrick Lamar breathe?
I have not thought about that. That's a good question.
He has reached like Kenny G levels.
That's great that I was going to make that Kenny G
of holding his breath, but rapping at the same time. I mean, it is unbelievable.
I think he's using circular breathing.
Yeah, that's my theory. Kendrick Lamar is using circular breathing. He's like playing a didgeridoo and rapping.
I bet you didn't expect that in the 2017 Year in Music podcast was going to feature a Kenny G reference. You lost that bet.
But they're almost indistinguishable because honestly, both songs could be in this slot. I don't even remember which one I put in my top 10. I put this or the other one. I think maybe Humble overtook DNA at the last minute, but each of them, just because of the visceral feeling of it, right? DNA is really good and it comes at you, but there's something about Humble and like pairing it with the visual of Kendrick dressed like the Pope in that open room.
And the visual of Kendrick playing golf poorly.
Wait, I don't think I've seen this. Wait, what?
That was in the video, wasn't it?
For Humble?
Am I misremembering that?
Playing golf? I think you're thinking of the Mo Money, Mo Problem with Puffy Woods.
You know, was it Barnwell that made a joke on Twitter last week about Puffy going from golf to the NFL? And people did not get that joke at all.
Like, that video came out 46 years ago. No, we were with
so old.
Baby Fantasy Genius. I've been going through. I don't like admitting this publicly because it feels a little bit too Jack Black School of Rock. But I've been going through and talking to him about different music for different time periods. And earlier today, we were talking about 90s rap music. And we were watching the Mo Money, Mo Problems video. And talking about just how important Tiger Woods was. It told us more about Tiger Woods than it told us about Puffy or Mace or Biggie. Right? Because they made a video, a rap video, around the premise that the most famous artist in the song was a golfer.
I hadn't really thought about it that way, but you're right.
At the time, we didn't question it. Do you remember 1997, 98, when that came out? We thought it was awesome.
I actually don't have strong memories of that video.
Man, Mace was the broadcaster announcing it. The other person's name was Fuzzy something, like a joke on Fuzzy Zeller.
Yeah, that's... It was a long time ago.
So Fuzzy Zeller has been dead for decades. yeah, anyway.
All right, we got off track here, but I don't know if we have anything particular more to say here. All right, in the number one spot, the aforementioned Cardi B with Bodak Yellow.
What a year for Cardi B.
For sure.
I mean, 2017, you say that it was mostly about this song, but it doesn't need to be about anything more than this song.
Yeah, that's fair.
I remember the first time that I scanned the music blogs every morning, right? And I remember seeing this pop up and being like, I think Cardi B is some sort of, I don't know, like reality show person. I didn't really understand who she was. And then the song, I like listened to it and I was like, it's pretty good. Doesn't really have a hook. And then over time, it just kept going and going. And honestly, seeing the song be maybe the most popular song of the year and also being the number one song in the Pitchfork Top 100 Songs of the Year is kind of a marvel that there was a rap song where there's no real hook to it. It's not that catchy. It's all about her force of attitude.
Yeah.
And I think that attitude, kind of what I was talking about at the beginning, that attitude is what will be remembered from 2017. And I think that's what made it the top song.
Absolutely. I think it was definitely a song that was of the moment and for the moment.
You have nothing else to say about Cardi B?
I can't say I'm the biggest fan of this song.
I can't say
I'm the biggest fan of trap music in general.
The first time you listen to it, you're like, okay. And then you just keep listening to it. And you're like, all right, okay, maybe I'm into this. And then all of a sudden you're like, little bitch, you can't fuck with me. Damn, I went there. My gosh.
I'm glad that you felt empowered enough to go there.
Wearing a baby on me right now. Jesus. What just happened? That's a true story.
All right, so that wraps up the Pitchfork Top 10. Now we get into our own personal 10 favorite songs of the year. Do you want to do honorable mentions?
I really don't have any. I mean, okay, so...
You were struggling with this list.
For my...
Right up until the very moment.
Didn't like 10 songs this year.
It's a strange choice. To me, it was very difficult this year to cut down to 10.
There were at least a solid 12. Okay, so for my honorable mentions, what I will say... first, to admit some biases, right? So, work at a booking agency. Spend most of my time listening to artists that don't have booking agents, right? Like the
up-and-comers.
The amount of time that I'm going to spend listening to Cardi B, if you think of the pie chart of music listening, is going to be very small, right? Most of my music listening is going to happen. I think of there's work listening, like those 8 hours, where I'm solely trying to listen to new artists or artists who maybe artists from the agency that I work at or whatever. But also, this top 10 list, I try to cater it to artists that are a little bit more known, right? It wouldn't be interesting to listen to a list of be like, oh, well, there's this British band called Sorry who have 2 songs out. They're signed to Domino. And, you know, I feel like they might be the next Radiohead.
Wow, you are going to dislike my top 10 then.
Wait, really? Wait, is Sorry in your top 10?
That is not, oh. That's not that one. There's definitely...
Is it Black Fly?
No comment.
So good. But you understand what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to just list artists who most likely will be unknown 2 years from now. You know, if you just have a few songs out, try to look for more established career artists.
Okay.
So there might be some. Like, if you were to put on the song MK by Kintaro, it's like the song that I want to listen to the most this year. Right? But it's not in my top 10 because I understand it's not really going anywhere. But also, it's the only time that we really heard Anderson .Paak the entire year.
See, I didn't like that song that much.
Oh,
I was
man. Surprised
because I really wanted to like it because Anderson .Paak was probably my number one artist of 2016.
Or 50. It was 15, I think, Anderson .Paak.
No, it was
last that 16?
Year.
Okay.
Yeah.
But like, that's the only time that we heard him all year, and I just want to hear that song.
I agree. I feel like one of my takeaways from this is there's some music I'm waiting for. I assume in 2018 we're going to get something new from him. K-Tronada. K-Tronada puts out something new. That was my other top
collaborations between the two.
I mean, that was a very strong duo. Two great tastes that go great together.
So you're saying a Kendrick Lamar album isn't enough. Okay. 3 Brockhampton albums wasn't good enough for you.
We're good. All right. Do we want to do honorable mentions?
That was my honorable mention.
Okay. So I had one song that I had in my top 5 when we did this mid-year, which was The Weather by Pond, which is an Australian band most famous for their relationship with
Tame Impala.
Yes. And then also the most random song I enjoyed this year that was close to being in my top 10.
What was that?
It Ain't Me, Kygo with Selena Gomez.
Okay. I don't even... I probably would recognize that song, but off the top of my head, I don't.
Yeah. All right.
If they play it at pools in Vegas, I'm into it, though.
I don't know if they do. All right. Should I start with my number 10?
Sure.
All right. To my number 10, the solo debut by Harry Styles,
oh,
Sign of the Times.
God, that song is so good.
Such a perfectly crafted pop song.
Really, just the term Sign of the Times is just like it's like a haunting term, right?
Is it?
References Prince. I just love everything about it. You look at Harry Styles in the video and he's floating and he's got such expensive shoes on.
Oh, I haven't watched the video.
He's like a young Mick Jagger. Oh, I love him.
Okay.
Man.
You told me earlier that you wanted multiple Harry Styles songs in your top 10.
The only one I've heard.
Right. I didn't like the rest of his album that much. I listened to the
I was thinking about that and thinking about how if you're Harry Styles, like Kendrick Lamar couldn't do this, but if you're Harry Styles, you only need that one song. And everybody can watch that one song, and it seems like Harry Styles had a huge year, even though I could not name a single other song.
I feel like his fans probably still enjoyed the rest of that album. Yes. And they are legion. They are many. All right, your number 10.
My number 10 was a combo number 10. This is where Lorde appears. So for everything I said about for everything that I said about Jack Antonoff, he can produce a pop song.
That's true.
And he especially can produce a muted pop song. And a couple of those, they sound very similar together. The song Liability by Lorde and the song Happy Birthday Johnny by St. Vincent.
Oh, that's interesting. Liability was, I was going to say, when we talked about Lorde, I was going to say that was my favorite song off her album. And that was the song where her voice was like perfect for that song.
Yes. I feel like those two songs together, kind of tone-wise, really exist in the same world. I mean, St. Vincent's talking about something a little bit different here. Lorde is talking about having trouble in relationships. St. Vincent is talking about how her friend is living on the streets because he's addicted to whatever drugs.
Heroin. It's very clear.
Okay.
I've read the Genius page lately for that one. No, it's
specifically heroin. And also just the Jim Carroll reference, and I'm like, I'm in.
That's a great song. I think I told you earlier that New York was my favorite of the St. Vincent songs. And what I actually meant to say was it was Happy Birthday, Johnny.
There you go. That's a pretty big difference between those two.
Is there?
Well, just that you said a completely different song.
Whichever was the one that was less popular was the one that was my favorite. Okay. I didn't misremember which
you were,
was
you were like, oh, yeah, that's my favorite song for them. And I'm like, yeah, the lead single and most popular song. Thanks.
It's like when I mix up Jell-O and Mellow Ball. In number nine, speaking of 90s R&B sounding songs.
Really?
Sonder with Too Fast.
Oh, man.
A song that I discovered off of your playlist of the best songs of 2017, which I'm assuming we're going to make public at some point here.
When you release this podcast.
Okay.
I'll convert it over to Spotify.
It sounds like 90s R&B. It's great. Notably, so I was listening to this song as I was driving back from Portland the day of the Apple Cup. And I'm just over the Oregon-Washington border. And as he's singing about, there's no such thing as too fast. A car gets pulled over in the left lane for speeding. That was poetic.
This is what people talk about certain songs where I read, I think the Pitchfork list mentioned this about Carly Rae Jepsen, where they're like, this song more popular. Just like, yeah, this kind of music isn't that popular. This kind of music is popular. And why wasn't it more popular?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't know anything about it until I listened to it, you know, at the end of November. All right, you're number nine.
My number nine, Beauty of the Road by Future Islands. Partially because...
Beauty of the Road. That's interesting.
I spent so much time working on Future Islands for this year. They had an excellent album.
Was their time on the road a beauty?
And spent so much time on the road this year. This song being about touring, it feels like it's very fitting for a band that really likes being on the road and is willing to kind of go to any place. And then I saw on Instagram today of lead singer Sam Herring coming back from Japan and greeting his girlfriend coming back from the road. I thought it was very fitting for that song.
So should I do my Future Islands song now, or do you have more Future Islands songs coming? So I debated among several Future Islands songs their album, The Far Field. And this was not one of them, intriguingly. So I was a little surprised you went this direction. I eventually settled on North Star is my favorite off this album and put it fourth overall.
Wow.
Yeah.
Future Islands didn't get the kind of love from the top 100 list that I was expecting. I think maybe the generic top 100 list people get a little bit sick of listing artists so often.
It hasn't happened with Kendrick Lamar.
Okay, how about this? I think that the top 100 lists get sick of listing indie rock artists so often.
Fair.
Which they're correct to be sick of listing Father John Misty so often, because how is that guy still around? Come on!
All right, let's all remain calm here.
Was he in your top 10 too?
Oh, no.
God.
No, he was not.
That album cycle never ended. It just went into the next album cycle.
That's true.
He never went away. Anyway, I was trying to explain this to you. So you watched that Jim Carrey documentary?
No.
Okay, well, are you aware of the Jim Carrey documentary?
I've heard Chuck Klosterman and Bill Simmons discuss the Jim Carrey documentary.
About how he was so consumed by Andy Kaufman, right? That he became Andy Kaufman for the Man in the Moon movie, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm like, when are people going to notice that Father John Misty... I can't remember who the person was that I said. This sounds bad now.
Andy Kaufman?
Was just doing a Jim Carrey impression of Andy Kaufman in the movie and is living his life like that for good.
Huh. I had not noticed that myself.
Ugh. God.
In my number eight
spot.
We're
over it. Anyway.
In my number eight spot, The XX with Dangerous, which was not like the primary single from this album. That was On Hold, which I think came out in 2016.
Yes, that was on the 2016 top 10, I believe.
Right. There's the horns and sirens on this song. They match up with the theme and the name of this song and give it a really unique sound that I quite enjoyed.
Yeah, and if I remember off the top of my head, this is you're going back to the beginning of the year.
That's true.
If I recall correctly, this is the most Jamie XX song of the XX album.
Yeah, I think that's fair, which is a good thing. That's a compliment.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean that in the most positive way, because we want a lot of Jamie XX.
Obviously. All right, number eight for you.
Number eight for me, this is the most obscure artist, but the song Boys Will Be Boys by Stella Donnelly.
This is a really haunting song.
It's haunting, right?
It's hauntingly beautiful, because it's haunting how beautiful the song is, while at the same time the lyrics tell this ugly story that is very appropriate for 2017 of sexual assault.
Said it all right there.
Yeah. Okay. My number seven is Promised or Perhaps Threatened from U2. Lights of Home. Specifically,
how did you even find, you're the only person who's listened to this song.
Specifically, the St. Peter's string version in the bonus tracks of this, of Songs of Experience. So I had zero expectations for this UO2 album, given what happened with Songs of Innocence and the state of their career. And,
I didn't and even know that they were like a sequel to each other.
They are. And the Panama Papers, or whatever the recent papers were, and general revelation of their hypocrisy and financial matters. But despite all that, this was a really good album. This was one of my favorite albums of the year. And so I definitely had to represent it with something. Had a different song in here for a long period of time, that was actually not technically a 2017 song, but was also in the bonus tracks as a remix. But eventually went with this one.
Was it
one.
With or Without You?
It was not With or Without You. Extraordinary Love, or Ordinary Love. Ordinary Love, the Extraordinary Mix, I believe, is the song I previously had. This song about ostensibly about Bono's bike accident that he had several years ago that left him in the hospital and was kind of a bit of a near-death experience and therefore traumatic for him. And somehow U2 on this song and largely throughout the album has again managed to sound contemporary while also remaining faithful to the U2 sound. Which
you sound like Rolling Stone magazine. It says Jan Wenner.
Look, again, I did not come to be a U2 apologist, but my heart wants what it wants, and it wants this album.
I wait for the third in the series, Songs of Indifference.
I believe Songs of Ascent is actually the third. Songs of Ascent.
I was making a joke.
I know. God. I know.
You actually knew the next album's name?
I do.
God, wow.
So disturbing about... It's a good album. I don't care who. I don't judge me all you want. It was a good album.
I mean, I wouldn't know.
I mean, I kind of put it on like just out of obligation. Like, oh, okay, U2 has a new album. I'll listen to it one time, which I don't think I ever did with Songs of Innocence. The backlash, the vitriol was so strong there. I literally never listened to it. But this one was good. All right, you're number seven.
At number seven, I had the song Motion Sickness by Phoebe Bridgers.
Okay.
This is a song from a relative newcomer. I believe it came out on Secretly Canadian. And I listened to one of the first singles from her album and liked it. And then this song came out and it just hit me. It was one of those songs where I listened to it and over again. And I think for one full day, probably listened to it like 20 times. And still after seeing it performed on a Tiny Desk concert, various different places, still like this song. And she seems like one of the most promising young indie rock artists of our time right now.
We'll keep an eye on Phoebe Bridgers.
Bridgers.
Not
Bridges.
There's a second R in there?
There's a second R.
Oh, okay. She should take that out. In my number six spot.
Hey, kid.
You'll never make it in this town.
Bono?
Do you think that Bono is his real name? I don't know if you're aware of this. He changed his name.
Nobody's going to buy that.
Leighton Houston? What's his real name?
Oh, God. Oh, wait. What did you say?
Leighton Houston?
That's not it. Oh, I'm going to come up with this.
It's something like that.
I knew we were going to be coming up with Bono's real name on this podcast.
The real trick is coming up with the Edge's real name. This is more generic.
Your new name's George McCartney, kid.
So there's a three-song section here on my list where... I took like my
very high concept.
I took my favorite song off albums that I really were among my favorite of the year, where there were a bunch of songs that I really enjoyed off of each of these and could have picked any of them. So this one was a bit of a surprise.
Okay.
Odessa.
Oh, really?
Had never been interested in their music at all. Listened to their current album, whose name now escapes me. And it might have been my album of the year.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, you're going to be down there vibing with those 16-year-olds.
I am. the song eventually went with was Odessa featuring Regina Spektor, Just a Spector. Memory.
It's a soft or. She's a very famous artist, Regina Spektor.
I'm familiar with her work. I just don't know how to pronounce her name.
Well, I'll see you in the pit. What are we on?
Number six.
Number six, I had the song Smile by...
This is what you went with. Interesting.
Okay, so this is the place where I have to talk about how I didn't think the Jay-Z album was that good.
And yet.
And in fact...
That's funny, because I thought the album was pretty good, and yet I don't have any of the songs in my top 10, partially because of the fact that Jay-Z is not on Spotify, so I haven't heard any of these songs since
You should have gone to the show. You could have gotten a free 6 months to Tidal.
Oh, really?
Wait, did you actually want that?
Yeah.
I threw the card away.
What the hell?
I didn't know that you wanted free 6 months to Tidal.
I paid for a ticket for that show. I ought to at least get the 6 months out of it.
No, we sold your ticket. We owe you something for it.
Okay.
I better get the free 6 months of Tidal. Okay, so this is the point. I was waiting for the right moment all year to talk about how everything that you anticipate is bad.
Okay.
All great artists eventually are bad. The Jay-Z album is not that good. Curb Your Enthusiasm, very disappointing.
What? Oh, I think this is a personal problem for you.
BoJack Horseman season 4, borderline unwatchable.
I have no idea.
Game of Thrones. But the song was really good.
Oh, it's interesting.
The song was like the Loot Train Battle of the Jay-Z album.
The what?
The Loot Train Battle
I don't know.
The Jay-Z album. It's a poorly named fight from Game of Thrones for this year.
This is quite the extended metaphor, analogy.
But this song, first off, the beat's perfect. Best beat on the entire album. And then when he's rapping about his mom being a lesbian, I'm just like, oh my God, Jay-Z. I'm like, you're on some real shit right now.
That was some real shit. That's true. I would say my favorite song from this album was Marcy Me. But again, because I haven't heard any of these songs since July. None of them
back when you had Tidal.
Yeah,
you get
the free trial.
Rip your shit off Spidal just to spite you.
Should we do my number five?
Yes.
The War on Drugs, Thinking of a Place.
Oh, so good.
Again, this was a tough call.
It's going to be coming on my list.
Which
later.
War on Drugs song to do?
But it's kind of amazing that we settled on the same one.
I mean, it also is the top rated song in the Pitchfork top
100. I was a little bit surprised
17.
About that too. Because you talk about Thinking of a Place first.
I mean, I don't know that I have a lot of unique insights into Thinking of a Place. Again, like I said, you know, these songs, there were a number of songs that were really similar to me, but this ultimately ended up being my favorite one. I think Holding On was probably my number two choice here.
It's weird because I could probably not even necessarily name the other songs. I probably just picked this one out because I wanted to list it on this list. But it felt like when I was listening to this War on Drugs album, which I'm kind of surprised has not got the love I expected it to.
It's a really good album.
Both on the year end list, maybe because it's so dad rock and this isn't a dad rock kind of year. But every single song is basically perfect. I mean, I listened through it and I'm like, he's lyrically, it's not at what I would describe as Springsteen levels because basically nothing is. But you listen to it and you're just like, damn, every single second sounds so good.
Yeah, the vibe, yeah, it's great.
That's what's perfect. You just like, I want to live in the War on Drugs album.
I'm pretty sure I said that.
With all these children, I do. There's one.
I'm pretty sure I said something almost identical to that when we were discussing Red Eyes in the 2014 top 10. If I recall correctly.
We just both agree that we want to be living in
just
the...
Just live there.
Living in the War on Drugs world.
One of my takeaways from the year, though, by the way, is that it was a great year for vibe music. So I would...
Vibes are always important.
Vibe, but it was... There was a lot of quality vibes out there. And we'll get to a few more in a second here.
So speaking of which, I'll go with my number five, the song Soap by Deem Spencer. He's a young New York rapper who, like I mentioned earlier, is so laid back, right? And the song almost conversational and was really propelled, his whole first EP in general, really propelled by videos for each song where he's kind of playing out a marionette show, self-directed, everything about it. He's like living at his grandfather's house, taking care of his sick grandfather, recording this music that is kind of almost like downtrodden. You know, it's not mumble rap. It's like soft-spoken rap.
Okay. We already did my number four, which was, again, North Star by Future Islands. Your number four.
There's a lot to choose from here. But I went with the song Gummy by Brockhampton. So
that's your favorite Brockhampton song of the year.
So much material to choose from. And I felt like this one, there are a couple lines where, I mean, there's so many different lyrics. There's a song, I can't remember which song it is, where Merlin raps, "Swan dived on the 405. And I'm just like, I just like hearing that. I don't know. it doesn't necessarily mean anything, but I just like what you're saying. But the song Gummy to me is the most notable Kevin Abstract song. He's the leader of the group. He's doing the 8 Mile thing where he's coming out against his haters before they can come at him, right?
I do love that.
He's using
a classic all B-Rabbit
of the
move.
Arguments. They knew him in high school, right? He can't be rapping about high school stuff anymore, teenage stuff anymore. He's 20 now. When's he going to grow up? He's coming at them with everything that they would say about him before they can say it.
It's interesting that you listed this, but did not put this in your top songs of 2017 playlist. Of the Brockhampton songs there that I listened to repeatedly, I would say
Gummy
Star was my favorite.
Isn't in my top songs?
Not unless I'm missing something. It is not. But it's one of your five favorite songs. Let's see. Okay, we're on number three now?
Uh-huh.
All right. The vibiest. My favorite, not album, but my favorite mixtape of the year. Number three, Passion Fruit by Drake.
Don't get it twisted. Hold on. Like, something about that song.
It's a great song. It's a great vibe song. The fact that he left in the part where he starts over from the beginning, well, it made it difficult to listen to with your 5-year-old child because of the profanity, also made it great.
He's heard much worse.
That's
fair. And frequently.
That is fair.
I mean, I think this is going to go down as right in the catalog of the great Drake songs.
Yeah, I think so. Although...
Oh.
Foreshadowing.
Wow, I'm a little bit curious. Are you saying that you have another U2 song coming up?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
I think I understand where this foreshadowing is going. My number three song was Thinking of a Place by The War on Drugs.
My number two, also, wow, from the More Life mixtape.
You wanted more life.
Teenage Fever is a totally different style of song altogether from Passion Fruit. Drake has like two styles of great songs. There's like the upbeat, like song of the summer type songs. And uh-huh. Passion Fruit fit into that. And it was my favorite song of the summer, even though it never really took off as much as I expected it to. But then there's also the introspective Drake.
Mm.
That
the Marvin's Room Drake.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that, the place he hit on this on More Life was Teenage Fever, which used a slowed down hook from J-Lo's If You Had My Love and operated over that. And it doesn't sound like that should work, but yet it worked perfectly.
I love your top 10 lists because they're always so random.
I mean, this is my number one song in a mid-year, so you shouldn't be surprised by this.
I completely forgot that. Are you saying that Black Fly is your number one song of the year? Wow, you are going for it. God damn. Oh, man. It's like when you're doing the draft lottery and you find out that like a certain team is clinched to be in the top three or something. And you're just shocked.
Yes, that is it.
Like, they're giving the Cavs the number one pick again?
The Sonics moved up in the top three? Can we get Kevin Durant? All right, you're number two.
My number two is Humble by Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
I mean, so you had no Kendrick in your top 10.
Kendrick is technically amazing, such a great rapper. I don't always enjoy listening to his songs that much. I know this is my hottest take.
You're just wrong.
Even hotter than my take about songs of experience.
You're just bad. What about the song where U2 and Kendrick came together?
I know. Well, he's on the U2 album as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not
they did,
sure.
They did a home and home.
They really did. I think he might show up at the end of... Lights of Home. No, I guess it's not. I can't remember exactly which song it is.
You know the names of multiple songs in the album?
I do.
So I vacillated between DNA and Humble, as I mentioned. And to me, there was something so visceral.
And yet you decided the other one wasn't going to make your top 10 at all?
Well, I mean, how many... I'm not going to put two... There's like 10 slots. Like,
it's not like these, you know, these albums by The War on Drugs and Future Islands and Odessa where the songs are relatively similar. And there I thought it made sense to pick, like, these are totally, they're not totally different, but they're different songs.
You're defending your Drake choices right now?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I stand by those 100%.
Okay, so But to me, Humble was, I don't know which one we're going to remember 10 years from now. But the moment that I heard Humble exists to me in a continuum of hearing great rap songs of all time for the first time and being struck the moment that I heard them.
Yeah, I believe in the mid-year podcast, you told a story about the first time we heard
California Love. Yeah.
This a moment was like, I still do not recall.
The more that I talk about it, I'm trying to add that memory. You understand how memories work?
Yeah.
I'm trying to push that memory onto you. And then you're going to start telling it to other people. This was like hearing This DJ by Warren G for the first time. This was like hearing Country Grammar for the first time. This was like hearing B.O.B. for the first time.
I remember none of these things, to be honest with you.
I was watching the Box Music Channel when I heard Country Grammar.
Nice.
And I was just like, that's it. Music can retire now. I also had a similar feeling when I heard the Weird Al Yankovic American Pie song.
What?
Not that music could retire, but I remember seeing it and being like, he's rapping about like a Yoda or something. Oh, I think he has another song where it's... No, why am I talking about Weird Al? Anyway.
I thought you were at least going to be referencing the Dangerous...
I hope that somebody out there remembers the Box Music Channel.
Oh, people better remember the Box Music Channel. I mean, not the third Pelton brother, Mike B, because he was born like several years after it existed, but other people will remember it.
Okay, so the premise was that it was like a jukebox, but it was music videos, and it was the entire country, or whatever, maybe in the entire world. And our cable flipped over. Like, do you remember this? Like, randomly, when back in the day, you didn't choose your cable, right? You just had like basic or extended, and we had extended, and the channels that were on there just changed one day. It would be like August 1st. I'm pretty sure it was August 1st, and all of a sudden we had the Box Music Channel, and you're just clicking through, and you're like, what is this? Do I have to pay for this? Can I just watch these videos?
I mean, it was useful because this was about the point that MTV had stopped playing music videos other than TRL.
And then Country Grammar came on, and it ended music.
Wow.
That song was so important.
For music.
Anyway, this was like hearing B.O.B. for the first time. This was like hearing, I don't remember any specific instance of hearing Kanye West for the first time, but I'm sure it was a great moment for me. This was like hearing, okay, how about this? Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy for the first time. The moment that you first hear, can we get much higher? And you're just like, we can't. That was hearing Humble for the first time. It exists on that same continuum.
Okay.
From Warren G to Kendrick Lamar.
They've often said that. Kendrick Lamar has put himself in that same pantheon with Warren G. All right. As you have mentioned, in my number one spot, an obscure artist named Black Fly. Would you like to share the background on Black Fly?
I mean, there's not that much background. He's got a few songs out. Doesn't show his face. I believe he's from rural Vermont.
Which is producing all the best music these days.
And what did you go? Which song? Sign 2?
Sign 2.
So good.
So good. I had no idea what the song was until I heard it on your 2017 top songs, and it immediately ascended to number one on my list.
Wow.
It's like electro synth.
Started from the bottom, and now he's there.
That's true. I mean, that would be more appropriate if Drake had been at number one, I would say.
Drake's number 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. And then you two. Someday Drake and U2, maybe it'll be, Drake and U2 will probably do a combo album at some point.
Collab.
He's going to see what Kendrick did and be like, that. I'm just shocked to see this as your number one song. I mean, I really like every single Black Fly song, but.
Because there's only three of them.
My favorite artists only have three songs, but they never really caught on. It was an artist who I felt like was going to get a lot more attention than he ended up getting, and so far has not really ascended. Maybe this will be his huge moment.
From the Pelton cast?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, it all started here.
Sign 2 probably does not have as many listens as EXO Tour Life has.
That is very safe to say. It has 64,434 listens on Spotify as of this moment, as we're recording this. All right, your number one song of 2017.
I changed this right before we started recording. Kendrick Lamar was at number one for so long.
And you went with Cardi B?
Mm-hmm. I retroactively want to go back and take songs from the album Blonde and put them into my top 10 from last year. I don't know what was in my top 10, but Frank Ocean, in a weird way, owned 2017 without even putting out an album.
Just the sheer volume of appearances?
Singles, appearances, rapping, Frank Ocean can do it all. And I kept listening to Chanel. The moment it came out, I listened to it over and over and over again. And I kept listening to it, and I kept listening to it. And every single time I hear it, I don't get sick of the song. I think Frank Ocean has put out a lot of good music, and I feel like Chanel might be the best Frank Ocean song ever.
Yeah, that's high praise for sure.
The contrast, the first two lines, the my guy pretty like a girl, plus he's got fight stories to tell. You're just like, I'm in on this. This is what I want to hear. This is like Perfume Genius if he was a great R&B singer.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. Yes.
And could rap like Migos.
Yeah, for some reason, this song, the new Frank Ocean material is not done up for me.
Wow. What do you mean by the new Frank Ocean? Where are we starting? What's the starting point here? Because Channel Orange feels pretty dated now.
That's what I'm starting from.
Wow.
I mean, obviously, that's
my
a long
thing
time
about
ago.
How all the things that you're expecting are going to be bad.
That doesn't apply to Frank Ocean.
Does not apply to Frank Ocean. Everything that you expected from Frank Ocean, you think are bad for a little bit, but then turns out they're more than you could have ever wanted.
Well, there you go.
I want to retroactively go back and say that the album Blonde is my top 10 songs of 2016.
all 10 songs.
I mean, there's it's very rare.
That's disrespectful to Anderson Paak.
I'm going back to 2015. I'm giving Grimes those top 10 songs. But it's very rare that I listen to an album a year later. I mean, I mentioned at the beginning that I spend most of my listening time listening to new artists who have agents. Frank Ocean somehow has an agent already.
Someone's discovered him.
And I have spent so much time, especially in the last 2 months, re-listening to Frank Ocean over and over and over again.
Well, there you have it. 2017, the year in music. I think we've somehow covered it all. All of music. And I look forward to listening to more music in 2018. Mm. And we'll be back in a year with our new favorites. Until then, thanks for listening.
Thanks.